need to be quick back on. So, in regards to one answer, it's regards to friends, and one's in regards to family. And when I say family, I'm going to say extended family as opposed to immediate family, because my immediate family is all religious community, so like, I don't worry about the immediate family issue. But as far as extended family, I have a lot of... I consider my extended family like the UN, they go on every religious sequences in every religion of weirdness. So, the best thing that we got a lot of experience with my extended family, cousins, my aunts and uncles, etc., and even my like grandparents and stuff, was to not discuss things. Just they want to talk about, just like, okay, let's talk about something else. We love you, you're great, we're everything. Just, you know what? We'll keep kosher and you guys do what you guys do, and we'll just not. That will. Otherwise, you get into a philosophical debate that lasts. We learned that a couple of days. We were on a camping trip the entire time, we're talking about theology. And I'm like, this is stupid. I want to go to camp. Me and my cousins, we went to go play in the lake. Why are our parents talking about them? And we realized after a long time, my parents, my whole family, that when we're talking to family, you don't need to do kibbutz to them. Even though Jewish, don't do kibbutz to your family, it doesn't work. Because they know you, they're too close. Have somebody else, you have to, whatever, but just do your thing and just be respectful. Just say, hey, you know what? I also like to go fishing with family. And that worked really well for extended family. With your parents, I know it's harder, what I'm saying, but like, I know for extended family, they say, they would want to say, why are you doing this? Even my grandmother, they're like, why are you doing this? Because we're Jewish and we want to do it. Oh, you just live, you know, we like you a lot, we'll talk about, you know, something else. Something we don't have to, we would disagree, but let's not go into it. That worked very well. And I really think that don't be cruel to your own family really is like a major thing. It's very hard sometimes, but. And in regards to friends, if you pick good friends, you don't have to worry as much. When I went with my friends who are not Jewish, the Jewish ones, and we went to a place that one bar to eat or go out for coffee or something. They were respectful that I was religious, and they said, oh, you're religious. And even if we just talked to one, they never were like, oh, you should be doing, how come you're doing it? Even though they said, oh, we want to go out to eat, they said, okay, let's go to Trader Joe's or whatever store, we'll buy some kosher food, we'll all eat it or whatever. And if we really have to, you know, maybe we'll go out to the restaurant and we'll all go to the park and something to eat. And so they made it work. They didn't want to try and exclude you. They wanted to include you, but they wanted to find the ways to do that. And there are ways to do that in a respectful manner, not in a judging manner, which it seems that some friends want to, like, get you or something. Especially the Jewish ones. They really want to, like, stick it to you. But aside from that, like, I think if you pick good friends and your friends are respectful, and otherwise they would be your friends, I mean, then they'll understand when you say, look, I don't want to deal with it, just can we just deal with the practical aspect? I think that worked, at least in my experience, worked very well for me with my friends, and I have, you know, great relationships with all my friends, my extended family, and everything. And I think that doing these things really helped.
I hear you. Shukrach. Okay. David, any points you want to raise? You could swallow.
I agree a lot with Adam. I think that sometimes when somebody becomes more religious, it's like he's isolating himself from society. But it doesn't have to be that way. It's all really about your perspective and how you relate to certain situations that you find yourself in. Just say, if you go home and, you know, have your Shabbat at home, and sometimes I guess you might put up a brick wall between your loved ones or your friends, but it doesn't have to be that way. You know, if you need a hot plate, go out and buy a hot plate. Or if you don't like the milk or something, if the milk's not kosher enough in your house, you want challah bistro, you want a certain kosher to milk, and go to the store and get the milk. You know, it doesn't have to, your relationship doesn't have to be, you know, I'm living one way of life and they're living another way of life, and you can never really intermingle. But it can, they want to have a relationship with you, but they recognize friends or family that you're living a different lifestyle, and like, you can have a relationship. As long as there's ways to have a relationship, even though it might seem like there's things that are dividing it, but you know, most important, I think that it's very important that there's communication. You don't have to get into the intricate details of Torah. I don't really speak any Torah with my family or friends, but if they ask me something, I'll answer it. But it's really, you know, the most important thing is to be a good person and, you know, have good midot and you, whenever you find yourself in a situation, there's ways to, you know, do your part, and it would be a, it doesn't have to be that you're not talking to your parents anymore, or you can't go over to your distant relatives. You're going to a party, and you know, there's not going to be any kosher food there, like a family gathering. You know, maybe you could ask somebody to pick up some kosher deli meat tomorrow. Or, you know, you go to the supermarket and find the kosher salami.
What I've done that I find works very well is I always said I have a very sensitive stomach, which I do, and I always bring my own whole wheat bread wherever I go. So then no one's offended, and they see my dry whole wheat bread, and I always say, "You want some?" And they're like, "No, thanks, it's okay."
I did this trip last time. It worked.
It works. Sure, it works. They respect that, and if you have a very sensitive stomach, then you don't have to enter the issues of kashrut. You bring your own tuna fish cans. You can find good kosher tuna fish, I think, in most places of the world. American cheese, I know they use the word cheese, but I'm not sure how much milk content there is in that, because it could last out of the fridge for a very long time. You're talking about weeks. I know people who took it with them, and it was good at the end of their trip, like it was in the beginning of the trip. So I wouldn't recommend you try that at home. Make sure the cheese is still good. But, you know, there are ways, like David is saying, to avoid conflict, and I think we should adopt it. I would add a point to what you said, that sometimes we translate our fears into what other people are saying. And sometimes we are so self-conscious that we assume that's what they're thinking, and they're not. They're not. Yeshua Kach. Anything else?
From distant relatives when I became more religious, but it's really, if you just show your good side and you know, just be a loving and friendly person like you were always, you know, you can still be a friendly person, and eventually that hostility from those relatives, you know, it should go away. If they are showing hostility, I think it's a problem that they might be dealing with in their life. I mean, or maybe they have something against a certain motive, but you know, eventually it would disappear. And also Skype. If you're in Israel or away from home, Skype is an amazing thing. It's like you're in the next room over talking to your family and friends. It's, you see your family, it's free, and the work's great. Skype.
Yeah, I just want to tell you guys, there's a skill you might want to develop if you have relatives who are hostile. If they come to you and they come with all kinds of claims, you know you've become a fanatic. You used to be a lot of fun. You know, you used to be my favorite cousin. All kinds of lines. You have to be able. You have to learn how to do the following thing: to just say, "I hear." Conversation just ended. You don't have to respond. You know, out of respect, you say, "I hear." You look at them plainly and you just nod your head. And they're standing there and they might repeat the same line. So you repeat the same answer. It's a good, yeah, we discussed this, it's a good bargaining tactic. We discussed this in previous classes, right? I hear. Yeah, David, we're still with you.
Great. Also, the more halakha you learn, it's very important to learn halakha, because you see that you will be in certain situations, and it's not like halakha is not always black or white. You know, if you're in a car, you're in a car with your family or friends, and it's almost the sun is setting. You know, how are you supposed to daven Shemona Esrei? I mean, I guess there are some situations where that is daven sitting down. The more halakha you learn, the more, I guess, leniencies that you could use, and in certain situations you could use leniencies, and you know, not everything is treif or kosher. The more halakha you learn, and you should always get to have a number to a rabbi that you could call up and see, is there any way that I could go into this situation? Is there any way I could, do this or that? It's black or white. It's negotiable.
I think that's an amazing point. I would add another few points to that. Whatever rabbi you ask, make sure he has experience with Chozrim B'Tshuva.
Which is?
people who do tshuva. You can't call your standard local Orthodox rabbi because the answer you need is not what you're not in a standard local Orthodox scenario. So don't just call the local rabbi. Call someone who has experience in this area.
Someone who's done tshuva himself?
Not necessarily done tshuva himself, but has experience with people who have done tshuva. I had a very interesting thing last week. I sit in... there's a rabbi that answers questions here in the neighborhood, and I sit and learn by him once a week. So I'm sitting by him, and a guy who used to learn in Machon Meir, a student from here, who still calls me a few times a week with questions, comes in to ask his questions. And I see he's standing outside hesitating back and forth and back and forth. So I tell him, if you're uncomfortable, I'll walk out. You know, you don't have to ask me the questions. You want to ask the rabbi I learned by? Good for you. I'm all for it. So he says, no, I don't want to ask you to leave. So I said, whatever, however you feel. So the guy comes in and he takes out a list of questions he had asked me a week earlier. And he says, do you mind if I ask this rabbi these questions? So I said, no, quite the contrary. Maybe I'll learn something. What's wrong? Yeah, you want to ask him, ask him. So he went through the list of questions, and Baruch Hashem, all the questions, as far as I know, I answered the same thing as my teachers answered. And then he reached his last question, and he asks the rabbi, and the rabbi says, this is a question that requires someone who has experience with people who did tshuva. Why don't you ask him? And he points to me. And it's true. You know, out of experience, you learn that the answers are, like David correctly pointed out, it's not just black and white. And it's not only a matter of black and white. You have to really understand where a person is holding. The question happened to have been, how many times should I date a girl before I marry her? So you guys know I have a far-out cheetah. I always say minimum 30, 40 dates before you marry her. And he agreed with me. The rabbi I learned by, and I discovered quite a few Haredi rabbis who agree with me also. I'm not alone on the front. For people who did tshuva, who have such a rich background, you need longer dates. But that's one point which I want to also add to David's point that after you've been home for a vacation or you've been through something, and take time and rethink what happened, what were the difficult points, and then call your rabbi and ask him, what should I have done in this scenario? And you'll be surprised to find, like David pointed out, maybe there are quite a few leniencies you could have applied in that scenario, and maybe not. Maybe you have to be more stringent, but learn from it. Don't wait until next time and then you'll try to think back, gee, what happened last time and what am I going to do this time? Learn from it. You had certain encounters. Consult and see. Maybe other people have new angles. That's why we're having this class in this fashion, so I could hear from you guys, and I'm hoping to learn more than you guys learn in this class. Yeah, Adam.
As a follow-up to what we were talking about, what he said about values again, I noticed also that the way you speak to them, and this is what applies to all of you, but especially to others, it affects your relation, especially on these sensitive issues, like on conscious or anything. Like I noticed in specific cases, like even members of my family, different relatives treat us differently because of the extent that we argue with certain things or that we don't argue with certain things. And I notice a huge difference in how they treat all of us depending on the way we react and the way they say things. So just be careful in how you word things and how you say things. And, you know, I'm lucky enough that I actually have a good relationship with all my relatives and stuff, that they don't bother me because they know I'll answer some questions and not other questions. And I'm going to avoid certain topics unless they really want to know. And if they don't, I'm going to just avoid the conversation. But that, you know, we went through lots of conversations to get to that point. That was a lot of experience, though. I'm saying the way you word it, though, and this was everybody, but even specifically to that, just like carefully consider that. Don't just like start talking.
Yeah, I would add to that that it's always legitimate to say, I want to think about that. I want to. You you'll be surprised that 90% of the time people don't get back to you. Look at me, I do that all the time. I say Thursday night, and 90% of the questions never come back Thursday night. I don't do that on purpose, but that's the way it goes. And you've already deflated the argument once you say, I want to think about it. Yeah, I want to get to everyone here. So, Ariel, we're with you.
You should put out a big book. I haven't quite gotten to the end yet.
Slowly, I'm not hearing you.
Mishneh Torah is a big book, and I haven't quite gotten to the end yet. The quote is at the end, so I don't know much about it. What is there to know about when your grandma died on the other side of the ocean?
So maybe we'll have time to get to that later tonight. But right now we got to stay to the topic at hand. No, we're not doing question and answer. We're having a special class on dealing with visiting family, the challenges of visiting family. What are the questions people have? And
family who's sitting Shiva now.
Are they sitting Shiva?
Yeah.
And are you going to visit them?
No.
Okay, so let's leave theory for a different time. Okay. Does anyone else have things that they could share with us? Questions, comments? Before we go back to Yosef? Yeah, Yoel.
When I was in Sweden for Hanukkah, I found it extremely difficult to just be around my so-called Jewish friends. I really thought they could accept me, but they only see this, my black people. They couldn't see me at all, and that was very hard for me to take, since I've known these people ever since we all went together in the Jewish kindergarten in Stockholm. So that was very tough for me to be there. I moved on. It was just a small matter. I'm more mature than them. That's what I realized. And I've moved on, and they are lost cases, so I can't turn them back to Judaism.
I think on the point of friends, there's a point that for some reason I can't figure out why, guys here in Machon Meir miss. I always encourage you guys to make soccer teams and to do sports together and develop your relationships beyond Machon Meir. And I think I started a Google group. I'm also administrator of the Machon Meir group on Facebook. And I think that if you guys would maintain your relationships, maintain your friendships from your time in the Machon, it would help you, because one of the big challenges is that it's not so easy to maintain the friends you had beforehand, either because you switched continents or because, like you pointed out, sometimes they're in a different place in the world and they can't see beyond the fact that you're now wearing a kippah. They feel threatened by it. They feel a million things. But at the end of the day, sometimes they will not let the friendship develop. You could be as fair and as kind as you want to be, but in their minds, they might not be accepting of that. And then you're not left with much of a choice. You're not going to switch your whole life around just because your friend doesn't approve of your kippah. So then the only choice you have is to develop new friendships. Now, sometimes people don't realize this till after they've left the Machon, that who are going to be my friends? So you don't have to have 50 friends. I know there's this thing on Facebook. How many friends do you have on Facebook? That's not the gauge of what friends you have. You have to have real friends. And I hope that you guys find them here at Machon Meir, because if there has ever been a year that had an unusual high percentage of tremendously high quality people as human beings, this year has my vote. I mean, we've had... every year, Baruch Hashem, we have fantastic people. But this year really takes the cake, and I hope you guys take advantage of that and develop friendships with one another and invest in developing friendships. Friendship is something you have to invest in. It doesn't happen on its own. And don't expect to build the same relationships you had with your childhood friends. Meaning there's something that develops when you cut school together, play pranks together, do all the childhood, what they call in Yiddish, narishkeit, foolishness together. And that forms a relationship which you're not going to have with the guys here at Machon Meir unless you're immature. And then you still have maturity to have. But we don't have immature guys this year. So at your stage of maturity, you have to be prepared for developing a new type of friendship. But it requires investment. It requires taking time maybe to study together, maybe to be in touch with one another, maybe to call and hear how the guy is doing. It's not enough just to post him as a friend on Facebook. to have him on your buzz in Google. It's not going to work. You want a real friend, you have to invest. Chazal said, "Knei lecha chaver." And I think it would be to your advantage to take the time now, while you guys are still together. It's much easier to develop the friendship. Go and do things together. Try to have a chavrusa together. I took chavrusas not only people who would develop my learning and their learning, but also people who I want to be friends with. I have quite a few chavrusas that the whole point of my chavrusa with them is because I like them. So what am I going to do with them? I'm not going to go out to coffee with them twice a month. I'm not going to go play volleyball with them. So what's there left to do? So if I'm doing my Torah my whole day and my whole night, so I learn Torah with them. And you'll discover there's a totally different type of friendship, a totally different type of relationship you can form with people over the books and over life. You know, friendship is also about sharing life, sharing the challenges, thinking together. And it's a good skill to have for married life too. What usually happens is that when guys hit the teenage years, so they learn to be macho, big men, and big men don't cry. Big men who don't cry don't share their weaknesses. But the truth is that that prevents us from developing true friendships. True friendships is about sharing who I am and what my real difficulties are and thinking with other people and connecting with other people. So pick your friends wisely. Again, I have to stress this point. Don't think that just because the rabbis here are nice and friendly to everyone, that means that everyone is of a fine character. Everyone has things to work on. And people come into Machon Meir and we try to be warm and friendly with everyone. That doesn't mean that you can judge based upon that that's a person you should choose your friendship with. I only say this because I got serious complaints from serious violence that happened, and people chose their friends gauging by the fact that we at the Mahon were very warm to certain people who came to us, and we still try to be warm to everyone, but we knew the guy's violent history. Then suddenly we get a phone call. You know, he got upset at me the other day. He had his hands around my neck. He tried killing me. True story. And other stories that got really dangerous. And you have to gauge who a person is on your own when you're choosing your friend. You can't gauge based upon us. You have to gauge. You have to keep your eyes open and see who the friends you're choosing are. And I hope you will find friends. You guys happen to be in an amazing year here at Machon Meir. And I hope you will find friends that will be with you for life. People who you connect to. And you don't have to judge a person, but you have to judge whether you want to be his friend. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, so we're back. Yeah.
I'd like to bring up the issue of also friendship, but romantic friendship. When someone say I was going out with a girl for a long time and she's not religious, say I am, and you know, we go on the way, that ends up,
everyone else had that experience. What?
Everyone has a good idea, so to deal with it.
Do we have any volunteers? I think that this question depends on where the relationship is holding now. Meaning, I just came off of an afternoon where a similar question was posed, but everyone around the table still had a girlfriend who was not keeping Shabbos or kosher. And they were still sleeping together. And they were all trying to... they were new to Judaism. They were all trying to keep kosher and Shabbat. And I think that the answer to what to do with the relationship with someone of the opposite gender, where you want to lead a religious lifestyle and she very much does not, it's too individual. You know, it depends on where each individual is holding and where each individual is going and where the relationship has potential of going. I don't see that we can give a general answer. I do recommend that those of you who are not in a relationship, Be wary from entering one. You're all at maturation levels and ages where you're not far from marriage. The best solution is get married. That's what a person's supposed to do. It says in the Gemara. Once you reach the teenage years, so then the assumption is you're not going to have a day where your Yetzer Hara isn't pestering you. A normal human being is composed of mud and spirit. And the mud has its say in our life. And the Talmud says there are certain sins that a person can't avoid every single day. Tafiomi. last week. One of the sins is Hirhurei Aveira. Every person, every day is haunted by thoughts, improper thoughts. And a person has to control his thoughts. So it's normal that a person has normal desire. How do you hold it in check? So the simplest solution is get married. You know, it's not a cure-all. A person is still going to have every single day a certain challenge, but it does make it easier. And you guys are, Baruch Hashem, most of you are not far from the stage where that's going to be applicable to you. It's a good habit to get into to maintaining relationships within your own gender, and you'll have one person who's going to be of the opposite gender in your life, your wife. Other than that, specifically, each person is going to have to think, or preferably discuss with the rabbi and think together what to do with this. It depends very much on where a person's holding in the tshuva process, where the relationship is holding. All the details make for a completely different answer depending on who the person is. I don't know of a general formula. I will say that don't kid yourself. The halacha says, don't be alone in the room with a girl. Listen to the halacha. The halacha knows what it's talking about. The halacha says, you have to keep negiya. You have to reach that stage. You have to know that many people who were bigger and better than all of us thought that they could just do this and just do that, and we all know where the story ended up. So a person should aspire to reaching the point where he's fulfilling all of these halachot. Where each specific individual is holding in his path to keeping the Torah and the mitzvot, so every person is in his place on the path, and he has to work with his Rebbe to figure out what's correct for himself. The problem with these classes is that, like I mentioned, you know, the class I was dealing with this afternoon, this is the second class in a row I'm having with them on this topic, and it's the second class in a row I can't put online. Forget the fact that it's off color, all their questions. But the answers are what I think is right for them, but I can't know who's going to listen to that class. So I can't post it online. And, you know, what's right for them is not necessarily right for someone else. And I don't know of a formula. You know, the listener doesn't understand that a year ago they were all eating chazir, and that a year ago none of them were keeping Shabbos. So I have no way of posting such a class online. You have to find a Rebbe who can know you and think with you and figure out how to move forward on that. I don't know of other tips, but I welcome anyone else who has tips. I'm happy to hear them myself too. I'll say one more tip, and that is that in this area, this is an area that is probably the most challenging area of orthodoxy. And it doesn't end after you're married. It's easier, but it doesn't end. And one of the keys is, how long do I let my mind think about it? Meaning, this is the type of Yetzer Hara that the more you think, the more you want. And the Gemara says in Yuma, Tov Marei Inayim Me'alach Nafesh, our imagination is always more fruitful and more pleasurable than the thing itself in this area. So one of the keys to trying and conquering this area is controlling our thoughts. Because once you start thinking, the mind can keep going on and on and on and on, and then it can reach a point where this impinges on everything else in Judaism. Meaning, a person keeps Shabbos, he goes back to his community, he sees all the guys walking out with their girlfriends, and he says to himself, last week Shabbos was fun, but this week, gee, Shabbos would be so much better if I had a girlfriend. And everything he does can suddenly become under the shadow of, I'm such a poor guy, I keep Torah and I don't have a girlfriend. So we have to maintain perspective. It's not right. Shabbos is beautiful, kosher is beautiful, there are many beautiful things and they're all beautiful. And when I'll be married, they'll be even more beautiful. That's true. But that doesn't detract from their beauty now. And I'm building myself towards something that's far more positive than a girlfriend. And and a person, if he doesn't allow his mind to dwell on this point, that's one of the ways in which a person can conquer this point. But again, it deserves a much longer conversation. Okay, Yosef.
About the question posed to you last week.
So let's just finish this. So now that, does anyone else have some words of wisdom for us? Yes.
Just add on one small thing that you just said. This is a little bit of basically sharing, a little bit of Hasidus. First, it's, like you said, a great idea to stop thinking about anything improper. And then, later on, when you're capable, to not only stop thinking of something bad, but start thinking of something good. And that way, you push away with one and you bring it with the other.
Yeah, the Rambam says she'en hayetzer tokef ele et halev hapanuy min hachokhma. Desire only attacks a heart that is void of wisdom. When you fill your heart with Torah and wisdom, and you're busy with positive, you're busy developing. And positive isn't only Torah. If you're a productive individual, you could be helping society in many ways. Then it can be overcome. But part of it is also nipping it at the bud. Meaning when my mind starts to wander, to stop it and to recognize that it's normal, that every day, a few times a day, my mind is going to start wandering in that direction. That's a good indication. It means I'm normal. It's good to be normal. Right? It's a good thing. Okay, now I think I left my notes in the classroom, unless I put them down here. No, so give me 1 second, guys. I'll finish.
Someone can say after Bracha.
Yeah, someone referring to the same subject? Yeah. Okay.
There's some sauce here if you want.
Okay. So we stopped in the middle of a letter. So let us lay a few precepts that will hopefully pave the way to a resolution. Number one, we have to treat our parents with respect. Number two, we do not have to bury our aspirations, hopes, beliefs, way of life, etc., for our parents. There's a balance there. Number three, when critical issues come into conflict with honoring our parents, our life, quote unquote, takes precedence over theirs. Meaning, let's say a parent causes disharmony in someone's marriage. Meaning, the halacha says, then one has to find a way of discouraging the parent's presence in the home. Meaning, I don't have to destroy my life for my parents. And if my parents are going to affect important things in my life adversely, then sometimes I have to maintain a distance because my life comes first. Number four, parents affect us and touch us emotionally beyond where anyone else can. Meaning a parent can say one line and that's it. They've destroyed your day. There was once a guy here who finished his gear. So he called his parents. He was in seventh heaven. The guy was soaring. Yeah, there were all kinds of complications with the government, and year after year, we couldn't figure it out. He had to fly out, fly back. after a long time, he's been really trying. He calls and he tells his parents, I did it today. I went to the mikvah and I'm Jewish. And his father's on the line and he says, okay, Matt, you going to college now? He's like, Dad, one day a year, it's one day. I did. I finally got it. That's all you can say. He was devastated. You know, they took the day of his life and the guy just burst into tears. Here he wanted to share with him, he wanted to share with his parents this special day in his life. And they were still looking the way they had looked until then. We had a hard time making him happy that day. Parents can touch us. They affect us emotionally beyond where anyone else can. Number five. We want to lead a balanced life, not to sway in imbalance. And this is key, because part of balance is consistency. And if a person feels that right now he can't contend with the challenges that are going to be faced for him when visiting his family, then maybe he has to consider keeping a distance for a period so that he can remain balanced. One of the strengths, in my opinion, of Machon Meir is that Machon Meir produces or attempts to produce balanced individuals. We want guys to leave here and have self-confidence, and we want guys to leave here and understand Torah. We want guys to leave here productive individuals and lead balanced lives. It's not easy when people make such drastic changes in their lives. That's our goal. And a person has to see what affects him and how. Sometimes a person enters a setting where everything's in disarray. We once had a student who, his parents were missionaries. They were Jews, but then they joined Jews for Jesus. And he went to visit them. And when he visited them, so they spent the whole visit working on him. And he spent 1 week there. He spent another week there. He spent a third week there. And finally they said, we'll respect whatever you want. We'll let you buy your own kosher food. We'll let you have your own oven. We'll let you have everything. But you just got to do college. So come, move out here to, say, Utah or Oregon or who cares where. Move out here. You'll have your own room. You'll have your own kosher food. You'll have your everything. Just enroll in college. You got to have a living. What do you want? You'll finish college. You'll move back out. You'll go to Machon Meir. Go anywhere you want. After 3 weeks of bombardment, after 3 weeks of everything, all day they've been coming to him and opening up Bibles and saying, what do you say about this? And back and forth, and back and forth. He was confused. He signed up to college. Now he felt a moral obligation. They paid the admission fee. They already signed him up. He went to college. You guys can guess where the end of the story is. They were very smart. They waited until he was a little bit off balance. They got him enrolled in a college. So they said, you'll have your kosher kitchen. At last check, he wasn't keeping Shabbos. And this is a guy that was waking up vasikin every morning, kept everything. You name it, he kept it. And was learning very seriously here. So this next point is, when we're going to make life-altering decisions, you have to be in as impartial a setting as possible. Sometimes a person goes and visits and suddenly everything's in disarray, and everything we described in the beginning of the letter, all of that shoots home. And he feels like he wants to run. So run, no problem, run. Run to an impartial setting. Go to the Golan, go to Tzfat, go to Italy. I don't care where you go. Go wherever you want. Go somewhere impartial. You don't have to come back to Machon Meir. Go somewhere where you can think, but don't make life-altering decisions when you're in a situation where everything's discombobulated. We had another guy who went back. He was with his parents all summer. At the end of the summer, his girlfriend drove up and said, I think it's time we got married. He says to her, but I keep kosher and I keep Shabbos and I do all of that. She says, I'll learn. Wasn't easy. So the key is, don't make decisions in situations where you're off balance. And most people, when they visit their parents, are off balance. That's why Thanksgiving dinners are usually followed up with a lot of therapy. You know, people visit their parents, they visit their family, and after the holiday season, people need a lot of therapy to work their way out of it. So we're not talking about therapy here, but we're at least saying, take the time, land, then make your decisions. The next point is, even though our parents, hopefully, want what is best for us, they don't necessarily know what that is. Sometimes people say, but they want what's best for me. That's true. That's true. I'm not saying they're bad people, but you have to think. Do they understand me? Do they understand what we're talking about? And we have to know that a person can respect his parents even though we're different. We don't have to be the same in order to respect them. The letter ends with a few points. Being that they are my parents and love me, it is normal for me to expect that this love should be unconditional, irrespective of my decisions in life. I owe them the same unconditional love. Guys, remember that. You owe them something. Now, abusive relationships need to be discussed in their own place. We're not talking about that. Just because I think I am right doesn't mean I have an obligation to try and change them. That's Adam's point. I can respect them, even though I think they are wrong, just as I expect them to respect me, even though they think I am wrong. So we have to be fair here. You expect them to have respect and be fair to you and not try to change you even though they think you're wrong. Well, then you owe them the same treatment. You got to be fair. This is the end of the letter. The letter is online if you guys want to see it. It's in the special classes section in torahforme.org. It's under the title, I think, Parental Relationships. And these are just thoughts. And as I said in the beginning of the letter, I welcome your comments, the listeners as well. I'll be very happy to receive emails and grow smarter. Yes?
I have my grandparents who, whenever I speak, they always harass me about going to college, telling me that I may, basically, because I'm 21 and I don't have a degree in, medicine or something like that, I may want to be a failure. So, it's like we respect each other mutually. So they don't or at least my grandfather's don't usually bother me about this, but would it be chutzpah for me to say, you don't care about whatever religion, so why should I care about what you're saying about that? Or would that just be
tell you, I think that these type of conversations, especially with grandparents, if grandparents are trying to convince you to go to college, so I think that if you're strong enough, then I think what's fair to say is, firstly, thank you. You know, they do want what's good for you. And I don't know if you know this yet, but one of the first thing I say, and this might be heretical, but I say to guys when I speak to them about their future is, what's going to be about making parnasa, making a living? If you have a formula without college, okay, let's hear it. And if not, then let's figure out how you're going to get to college. You do have to put bread on the table. You guys want to lead normal lives. There has to be a way in which you'll support a family. You know that, because we had this conversation too, and I said the same thing to you. Way back when, the beginning of the year.
I know, but they
constantly. Wait. So I think though it's fair to firstly say thank you. I know, I appreciate what you're saying, and I hear what you're saying, and I'll think about what you're saying, and I hope you will.
Okay.
That being said, I think it's also fair to limit it and say, I hear what you're saying, and I really want to have a close relationship with you. I love you. And I would appreciate it if we could focus our relationship on other things. What I suggested to people, and they found that it works. I don't know if this will work with your grandparents, was to tell their grandparents that they feel like this is really affecting their relationship, and that they want a good relationship with their grandparents, and they want to understand their grandparents. So you could go one of two routes. The easier route is to tell them, do you mind putting your thoughts in writing so that I know that we've covered everything you have to say? Instead of harping on this point every time we talk, do you mind writing me a letter? I want to hear everything you have to say. Think about it. And not just in 1 second. So if you could just write it, I'll be able to think about it and read it. This is easier because you're not on the spot. It's not like, do you understand? Are you going to do it now? Are you going to go to college? Which college can I enroll you in? It gives you time to hear and think. On the other hand, they might not be willing to do that. Most often, they will say, fine, no problem, and then they'll never write the letter. And then every time they try to bring it up, you say, look, I really want to hear what you have to say. Do you mind doing what we discussed last time, writing a letter? And then at some point, either they will or they won't, but they have no excuse to come and barrage you. So that's what very often happens. It's like sometimes students at Mechon Meir find their parents telling them they need therapy. So sometimes the parents are right. But sometimes the parents are just, they figure, well, if you want to be Orthodox, then you're off your rocker. Let a psychiatrist set you straight. And in those situations, I usually recommend, if you can't avoid it, like a guy's living at home or for whatever reason he can't avoid it, he can't avoid the conversation, and I don't think the parents are in the right, so very often I'll talk to the parents and hear why they say it, and sometimes they'll say, what kind of sane person stops eating cheeseburgers? Well, if that's the whole reason they wanted to go to a psychologist, so what we would usually recommend is, if you can't get out of the conversation and you can't get it out of their mind, so tell them, fine, let's go to family therapy. You know, every problem exists as a family. No problem exists in a vacuum. Usually once the parent has to actually sit with the therapist, and the therapist, you'll be surprised if he's a fair therapist, so very often he's going to say, guy, listen here, Mr. Father, why don't you let your son lead his own life? He's not doing anything insane. He believes in this. Respect him. Let him live. And sometimes that solves the issue. Most cases, the issue dies then and there. Once the parent has to go and sit in the chair, it's over. So that just shows you how much they really think the kid needs therapy. I could tell you 9 out of 10, that's usually how it works. And the same thing here. And if you can't do that, if you can't get them to write a letter, so then the next best thing is to tell them, look, I think, again, I'm telling you what I think, is to tell them that you really value the relationship and you think it's a pity that every time this comes up and you understand that it's bothering them and you want to understand them well. And as such, you want to set up a time where they'll have their thoughts organized and you'll have one serious conversation with them. You'll take them out for lunch or whatever the situation is, and you want to hear everything they have to say in one sitting. So that you know you understand them correctly, because this time they said because of this reason, and that time they said because of that reason. And usually when you focus the conversation, and this is a key to many arguments with relatives, and you say, look, I want to hear what you have to say. You don't have to answer a single word. You just have to understand them. You don't owe them an answer. You owe them, what you're telling them is, I want to understand what you guys have to say. So with that understanding, they might prepare a whole slew of claims and things, and that's fine. Come respectfully, bring a notebook, bring a pen and paper, and write down and listen. Don't argue with them. Your whole point here is to let them say everything they have to say. And then at the very end of that, you have to say, thank you. Because again, they do have your best interest at heart. Whether they're correct in understanding what's best for you or not, I don't know, maybe they are correct. But at the end of the day, you do have to say thank you. They've taken from their time and their effort out of love for you to do what they think is best for you. You say thank you, and you say, look, I'm going to review all of this. I took notes. I want to think about it. And I respect you guys, and I value your opinion. And I want the relationship with you. So do me a favor. Let's agree from now on. If you have new points, so we'll set up another meeting like this. If you have more points you want to point out to me, we'll set up another meeting like this. But let's not ruin our relationship or harm our relationship by getting sidetracked each time we talk on this point. Every case I know of that tried this worked. So I hope in your case it'll work. But again, you have to do this at a reasonable time and not argue. All these points are critical. You're not arguing with them. Listen to them. What do they want from you at the end of the day? They want what's good for you. And again, maybe they're right. Remember, they might be right. College is sometimes a good thing. Yes? Just a second. We're on this point. Is there any other questions or comments? Okay, and so then I want to conclude with one more point. The one above, talk to him. Share with him your concerns. Davin, la'adam ma'archei lev. The pasuk says a person can prepare his heart, u'me'ashem ma'ane lashon. But Hashem is the one that chooses whether to put the right answer in our mouth or not. We could prepare as much as we want for all of this, but at the end of the day, Hashem sometimes has us say things and they find favor in other people's eyes, and sometimes we say exactly the wrong words at exactly the wrong times, and then everyone blows up at us. So talk to him. Ask him for his help, and Bezrat Hashem, we should be successful. The ways of the Torah are pleasant. Wherever we can, we attempt to avoid conflict and to do things in a pleasant way. We don't always have that option, but where we can, we should try and find it.